Hey, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jose Hernandez. A couple years ago, we had a workshop on how to account for spatial variability in on-farm trials and everything. So today I'm going to be speaking to you kind of like a short version of how to we take into account spatial variability in on-farm trials in general. A lot of this work was done in collaboration with Dr. David Mula from the University of Minnesota during my graduate studies here at the university. All right, so what we're trying to do is how do we deal with some of these trials where we're trying to superimpose a series of treatments or blocks, right? So we're designing these experiments and we want to put it in a field or some kind of ground that is going to be heterogeneous. We're going to have to deal even here in southern Minnesota, where everything looks very flat and very nice, you're going to have some inherent variability given just by the glacials that we had here and some changes in organic matter or erosion and such. So things that we might not be able to see. And other things that are man-made, right? Like, you know, when we're applying manures, when we're applying tillage, all of that is going to cause variability in our fields. So how do we deal with that? Well, number one, you don't have an experiment in this field for sure. That would be the first thing. But in general, we know that there's going to be, in a typical field, what I'm trying to show here is management zones or yield productivity zones in general that we have. And in a typical field, even under uniform management, you're going to have some areas of the field with higher yields, other areas with lower yields, and they're caused by many processes. So how do we deal with that when we superimpose an on-farm trial, especially large-scale trials? So I'm going to be explaining some of these methods. Let's start with experiments. So we're trying to collect some data to help us gather or make some decisions in the future. And we know that Ron Fisher gave us the three designing principles, randomization, replication, and blocking, that we still use after, you know, many, many years. All of these designing principles, the idea is like it will help us improve the precision of the trial or the experiment. They're going to help us have unbiased estimates of the treatment means and the experimental errors as well. And when we have blocking, what we're trying to do is trying to use that ability to find areas of the field, maybe like a trend or some kind of like a slope or something, and set up those blocks that in a way that will help us improve the precision of that experiment. Okay? Traditionally, some of the research that we carry out in small plots, and we're using randomization or replication to compensate for the spatial variability within blocks, and there's numerous experimental designs, right? Now, the critical thing here is like, and not many people see this in our stats classes, it's like you need to look at your diagnostics, right? All of these methodologies that we do are based on analysis of variance, which is a special case of linear regression, and we're assuming that there's normality and IID errors, okay? So you always need to look at your diagnostics, right? And this is just a printout from R, and as Cavell Brownie from NC State used to say, if you plot your fitted values versus your residuals and you see that kind of like megaphone shape, chances are you're probably violating some of the assumption on IID error. So what do you do with that? Well, you need to explore and see if there is some spatial variability or something that you need to take into account. Ron Fisher, again, he realized that fields are heterogeneous, and that's how he came up with these principles of blocking and randomization in general to take into account that. But he was not the only one that actually came up with some ideas about how to deal with spatial variability. As Melissa mentioned earlier, this is a paper by Mercer Hall, where they also talk about, he was one of the first ones that actually realized that he looked at the yield variability versus plot size, and he realized that there was higher variability the bigger the plots there were. As Fisher, I already mentioned, he came up with blocking, randomization, and replication. There was another gentleman, Jan Papadakis, a Greek agronomist, who came up with the idea of local control that later became what we now know as nearest neighbor analysis or nearest neighbor methods in general. And he actually disagreed with Fisher. So he wanted to take into account that spatial variability. He wanted to look at your neighboring plots or your neighboring data and take that into account in the analysis, okay? And Fairfield Smith also is worth mentioning because he was one of the first ones that came with some kind of like empirical function or relationship, essentially what now is our variogram or semi-variogram, so how to understand that variability in the fields. A little bit more recently, Tamura et al., 88, he published a paper in the Agronomy Journal and looking at trend analysis. So how do we incorporate a trend, some kind of trend, into our analysis of variance? Then Dr. David Mula, he published a paper on CCCA on how to remove the spatial variability. And what David did is he ran into some papers from Germany and where they were looking at some of those nearest neighbor analyses that Jan Papadakis had developed. And so he essentially ran into, I'm gonna be showing you some data later, but he looked at how to remove that spatial component. More recently, and what is now probably the standard, is the random field approach by Zimmerman and Harville, Biometrics 1991. And then Browning and Gompertz did a great job summarizing some of these recent methodologies in 93 and 97. They have essentially how to apply some of this methodology for large scale trials. So in general, you have two options when you're dealing with spatial variability. You can either incorporate the trend, incorporate the variability somehow in the mean, or you need to incorporate it in your errors, all right? So I'm gonna be showing you a little bit about some of those examples later on. This is from Cavell Browning, again, that paper where she's justifying some of the issues or limitations with large-scale trials. And essentially, it's like that heterogeneity within blocks, right? So that variation is going to affect the precision of the study. And she just said that, you know, even under uniform cultivation practices and such, there's still going to be also many things that allow variability within that, within some of those blocks. So I'm going to be showing you some examples here, trend analysis, nearest neighbor analysis, and the correlated errors or random field approach. And I'm not going to be talking about Bayesian. This is something I've been wanting to test a little bit more. But what I've learned doing some of this analysis is like every case is different. Every experiment is going to be different. Sometimes the nearest neighbor works better. Sometimes the random field of correlated errors work better. As Salvador was mentioning earlier, you can run, if you have like a precision ag data with like 80,000 data points and you're trying to invert some of those matrices as well, 10, 15 years ago, it was impossible to do in R or SAS or anything. So sometimes you had to do some subsampling and things like that. Bayesian has potential because you can look at your prior, right? So you can look at different things, maybe soil type, maybe your previous yield, maybe like satellite imagery. So you can look at many different things that you can use as a prior to account for that spatial variability, okay? So this is just a quick example to show you some of the methodology. This was one of the original papers from David Mula and Bathy. And I'm going to be showing you just the traditional analysis of variance, our trend models, the nearest neighbor analysis, and the correlated errors model. In the trend analysis, all that you're trying to do here, I didn't find a, do we even have a pointer? So what we have here is our treatment effects, right? We don't worry about our blocks anymore. That's something that you need to remember. When you are looking at spatial models, typically you just remove your blocking effect. Now, what this trend analysis by Tamura said here is that you can fit some kind of like trend. In this case, it's a second degree polynomial using rows and columns. And you can do that, you know, first degree, second degree. You can look at rows and columns only, as I'm going to be showing you the example. So this data set from Bathy was a wheat trial, and each one of these colors, black, red, and green, is going to be, each one of these is a block, all right? And we have here distance and yield. So there's clearly something going on here, and in this case, it was a soil effect, just depth to a clay, in this case, in Washington, all right? So you can just go and fit some kind of model here, fit a trend. So that's the same yield data, distance. In this case, it's just a second degree polynomial there using only rows in this case. And we can compare our analysis of variance. So the top analysis of variance will be what you will traditionally will do. And many agronomists will probably be happy looking at a p-value of 0.05 if you don't look at your diagnostics. If you go and stop there and you say, oh yeah, everything looks good, I'm going to publish this. But if you go and look at the analysis of variance diagnostics, you realize that in reality, you're violating some of the assumptions. So a smarter agronomist will go and remove the block effect, try to incorporate some kind of trend, and now you can actually look at the treatment effects in general. So you're explaining a little bit more of the variability. In this case, the trend does a pretty good job. As we can see, you can really fit that into the model. So it's very basic. In the case of Papadakis, it's a little bit more complicated. What you're doing is calculating a residual or some kind of like a covariate based on your neighbors. And this is like the rock case. So if you're looking at your, you know, north, south, east, west, you estimate some kind of residual, and you use that residual as a covariable in your analysis of variance, which you can just simply incorporate over here again. So you have your mean or your treatment effects and your covariate or your Papadakis covariate. And yes, this is just to illustrate, you know, in a very simple case like a randomized complete block where the first step will be try to estimate the residuals based on the plots that have the same treatment. And then from there, what you do is you just estimate a new residual based on your neighbors. Very similarly, you can just go and do kind of like an analysis of covariance and incorporate that Papadakis covariate into your model. And you know, it doesn't, in this case, Papadakis doesn't do a really good job trying to explain that variability for this specific data set. What has become a little bit more common, and it was hard to do many years ago in something like SAS and R, but it's a lot easier today, is like the random field approach of the correlated errors analysis. And that essentially what it's doing is you're going to be incorporating the spatial variability in your errors. So these errors no longer need to be IID. These errors can have some kind of like spatial trend or something, or spatial component. And you can incorporate other things. You can even incorporate Tamura's trend or something like that. So those errors can have an exponential or spherical function. And what you end up is with something like this, is your treatment effect and your p-value. And typically, this is probably one of the best models to explain some of the variability. If you look at the errors before the correlated errors analysis, this is how the errors look like. So there's clearly a spatial function in this data. This is a semi-variogram. And after you run the correlated errors, if you look at the errors of the random field approach, then those errors are flat. So no longer there's a spatial component in those errors. Mula and I work in kind of like, instead of like the rocks case, more like a Queen's case, a variation of the Papadakis approach that we use for some precision ag, analyzing some precision ag data in large scale trials. And what we did is just look at essentially a radius, and we use jackknifing and kriging to try to predict some of those residuals, and then an iterative approach to essentially smooth out the variability. I'm not going to be showing you that today. So in conclusion, we have we know about spatial dependence. It's been long recognized. We talk about Fisher's solution, and we talk about other solutions that are available today. Some of these models will allow us to take into account where we have that spatial structure present, especially today in some of the large-scale trials that we are trying to work with farmers, where we are, you know, collecting yield monitoring data and superimposing like really large strips. Some of these models might help us analyze some of that, some of those type of trials. In my experience, it's been the correlated errors analysis is typically superior and more robust than some of the nearer neighbor analysis, but in many cases, nearest NNA analysis or even trend models is sufficient to run some of these kind of analysis. 15 years ago, it was a nightmare to try to do things with SAS. I think today with R and even with SAS, you can actually run some of these models fairly easily. Another thing that I want to say is like, yeah, not all models fit all cases. And the Bayesian approaches are becoming more popular and might provide some alternatives in the future as well. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Did you try any
correct. So that is similar to, yes, so you can do that. I didn't include it today, but in the workshop we talk about different kinds of data. So the first thing that you need to do is like, what kind of data you're working with? Are you working with lattice data, aerial data, or are you working with some more like geostatistical data? So you need to make your assumptions depending what kind of data you think you're working with. And then, yeah, like the ARIMA models or some of the autoregressive models, those are designed for lattice data. They are very similar, and they typically provide very similar results to what you will get with like correlated errors analysis. That's been my experience. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Did you try in a mixed model context using those kind of models?
Correct. So, yeah, essentially the correlated errors is a mixed model. Yeah.
It's I'm asking simultaneous autocorrelation model, is there any package or task that is available compared to correlated
Yeah, I mean, all of this was done in SAS, and more recently in R. So yes, there's package available that you can do for a lot of the nearest neighbor analysis. I did program that myself, and for some of the trend analysis and such, you can do that very easily. But for the mixed models, there's packages available.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.